I'm John Kroll. Mass Transit for Indianapolis and Central Indiana is at a critical juncture, one that requires public input. Today on No Limits, we're going to talk about both plans and possibilities for the future and invite everyone who lives in this community to take part in the conversation. My guests are Brian Llewellyn of Indigo and Mark Fisher, the Vice President of the Indianapolis Chamber of Commerce. Please join the conversation. Call 866-476-3881. Email is nolimits@wfyi.org. Facebook is nolimitswfyi. Twitter is WFYI. Now, this news. Welcome to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We're going to be talking today about mass transit in Indianapolis and central Indiana. If you would like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI or on Twitter at WFYI. My guests are Brian Llewellyn from Indigo and Mark Fisher, who is the Vice President of the Indy Chamber of Commerce. Welcome to both of you.
Thanks for having us.
I'm glad you came in here on such a cold and foreboding day. So let's talk, and actually probably it would be the kind of day a lot of people would like to take mass transit rather than battle the roads. So let's talk a little bit, because obviously this is a subject that has dominated conversation for at least the past 5 years and really going back more than that. I'm sure there are more than a few people out there who've lost track of just where we are in the story right now. So if you could give us a quick summary of the point we are at right now. Brian.
So for years, like you said, Indianapolis and the region have been talking about how to move the ball forward and invest in a more robust public transportation system. There are dozens of indicators that show that investing in public transportation returns benefit to the local economy, gives people access to jobs, has environmental benefits, opportunities to attract business and bolster redevelopment in neighborhoods. So in the 2008 timeframe, there was Central Indiana Transit Task Force that was spearheaded by Mayor Ballard at the time, who kind of put together a group of private sector folks. Mark?
Yeah, that was the Indy Chamber, MIBOR, CICP, the Corporate Partnership, the Central Indiana Community Foundation, really came together to do kind of an ROI assessment. You know, where are we going to be able to put our money to leverage the most return on investment? And looking at the current plans at transit, roads and highways and transit and trails and really a multimodal system comes together, and how we're going to have that have the highest ROI per our investment. In order to do that, though, first
probably those who don't speak investment banker, ROI means return
on investment. Sorry.
Yeah, that's okay.
I think you might have to do a little lingo check on
that's
us.
That's all right.
But we did. We came together working with the public agencies and developed a very strong plan, the Indy Connect plan. That has gone through several iterations. The Indy Connect public outreach strategy was the largest public outreach campaign in our region's history. Just looking, we had 75,000 people at the state fair one day stop by and look at what a bus rapid transit bus would look like. So hundreds of public meetings, feedback, and then from that feedback, that plan has been changed over the years, and based on the feedback we've received of where people want to see the routes, what kind of technology they want to see, what is the most cost feasible. But you're right, for the past 5 years, it has dominated the discussion. What happens in that 5 years? So it's time to develop a new local plan. So, Brian.
Brian, throw it back to you now, tag teaming it.
So Mark mentioned there's been lots of public input going on. All the while, there's been this kind of technical approach and a reality check about what could actually get built in central Indiana, given the political climate and given, you know, what the land use and what the actual market for transit looks like. Those are a lot of the data points that have gone into developing these various iterations of the plan. So the IndyConnect vision kind of set out this long range regional transportation vision. It called for an increase in local bus service, development of new rapid transit lines, and it kind of painted broad strokes. As the years have gone on, we've gone more and more into depth, and now we're at a point where we have rolled out what Marion County could do given new legislation that passed last year. So based on all the planning and the public input that's gone on since 2008-2009, now we're at a point where we actually have a solid plan about what could happen if a referendum gets passed. And Mark has been really involved with the kind of behind-the-scenes logistical stuff about the funding.
And the legislation that became law last year allowed what?
Sure. So it allows six counties in central Indiana, county by county, to go to their voters and ask their voters if they would approve using local option income taxes between 0.1% and 0.25%. So we're talking about a quarter of 1%, up to a quarter of 1%, to fund the expansion of transit within their communities and development of a regional transit system. Again, this is county by county, so it will be up to those individual communities to develop what their local bus system or local transit system looks like and how it connects into a broader regional system.
Let me, before those six counties, presumably, obviously, Marion's one of them. The others are the donut counties?
Hamilton, Johnson, Shelby, Hancock, and Madison. So the western counties, the counties west of Marion County, were removed from the legislation at their request. So that is that becomes a challenge when you talk about job access and getting to warehousing jobs in Hendricks County or Boone County. But we do have express routes going to the warehousing districts and those and the logistical districts in those communities right now, but those are demonstration projects. So it is an opportunity to show that the demand will be there for these express routes to continue with local funding. But it's going to be up to those local communities to talk to their elected officials, to talk to their business community, to talk to their businesses, individual businesses within their districts, and help them understand what a robust transit system would mean for personal mobility and workforce mobility.
If you are just joining us, we are talking about mass transit in Indianapolis and central Indiana. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at wfyi. So we've gotten to the stage now where a referendum is possible. In fact, all of these counties can make their own decisions, which is really what the legislative fight was about for a long time, was to return control of this and the decision-making authority back to the county level.
That's exactly right. We had approached the legislature with the argument that transit and discussions about expanding a transit and the benefits of a transit can provide to a community really need to happen at the local level. We are not a home rule state, so we had to go to the legislature and ask for permission. They did add an extra step before we can go to a referendum. The local legislative body needs to vote to put that question to the ballot, mm-hmm. on the ballot, and then once a vote happens, they would have to come back and enact that tax. It's a referendum that is not binding, but it sure would give clear direction to a legislative body on the amount of support in a community.
So there would be three steps.
It is a three-step project.
Well, there's three stages for basically a county to say no. The first is in that initial vote in their legislative body, presumably their council. And then the second is at the referendum. If the referendum fails, that kills it too. And then the third one is after that, it goes back before the same legislative body.
I like to think three opportunities to say yes.
Yes, well, I'm not confident that's what the legislature was thinking, though, having spent some time with those folks. So take me where we are right now then is, and I guess I should ask a big picture before we really start start drilling down, because it sounds to me like in some ways this is a planning nightmare, because you don't even know how many counties you might have participating. Do you have to come up with plans that involve all six and then combinations of 5, 4, 3, 2? You know, presumably you're going to go ahead if some counties opt out, right, Brian? Or is that, or you, Mark, do you want?
You can really do it by county by county. So I think the assumption is Marion County, a lot of the other surrounding counties would look to Marion County to make sure that we're ready to make that investment. At full disclosure, I'm on the Indigo board, so I might say we interchangeably. That, you know, they may decide to look to Marion County to take that first step. So it is very important. A lot of the communities outside of Indianapolis, Marion County are having discussions and developing their own plans, whether they would be ready for a November 2016 referendum is yet to be seen. Whether Marion County is ready for a November 2016 referendum is still some of the things that we're working through.
And what is, obviously we've had a change. You made reference to the fact that started under Mayor Ballard, it's now Mayor Hogsett. You know, the political winds have shifted a little bit. Yeah. Where is the current administration on this now?
We'd actually say the issue of transit and expanding transit is not, it didn't start with Mayor Ballard. I remember, I've been at the chamber for 12 years. I remember sitting on Mayor Peterson's Blue Ribbon Task Force when they had proposed some route cuts. So the issue of how we fund transit and how we have an effective transit system has been multiple administrations, both Republican and Democrat. With any new administration, whether it would have been a Republican administration or a Democratic administration, new administration, new council, you know, they're still not fully staffed up already. So you have to give them time to assess the situation, the fiscal situation, the political realities, what their other priorities are. So the conversations are being had. I think that there is general support. You heard this in the elections that the people should have a voice on this. But we're not to the point yet where everybody is ready to sit down and say, okay, we're going for a 2016 referendum. Let's do this.
And I should ask also, I presume, where is this on the chamber's priority list?
This is one of our top priorities. The legislative effort was our top priority. Unfortunately, it was our top priority for many years because of failed attempts at the legislature. But this is a very top priority.
So now your lobbyists have to find something else to do.
Well, no, I am our lobbyist. We work both sides of Market Street. But, you know, this is a huge issue that has come up in our Comprehensive Economic Development Study, which is our Regional Economic Development Plan. Workforce mobility, the lack of transit in terms of our ability to attract and retain talent. These are very top concerns that our business leaders hear and experience in their daily lives. So it is a top priority for us, and we're going to continue to work with the council to build support there, work with the mayor's office, and then work beyond Marion County because, you know, the job growth in our region is largely happening on the periphery of our region, and we need to make sure that we're providing access to those jobs, not just in Marion County and throughout Marion County, but throughout the entire region.
Let me ask real quickly, when is the point of no return in terms of putting this on the ballot for November of 2016? Because, you know, we are in 2016 already. That's 9 months away from the election. In fact, a little bit less than nine months now.
Yeah. Right. So there is a drop dead date that we would have to send, the city would have to send to State Department of Local Government Finance to certify the ballot question. I think that is in late May. So if that's in May, you know, late May, you start to walk backwards and look at when something would have to be introduced at the council. You know, but the fact is, this is not a new issue. As you said, this has dominated the discussion for many, many years. I think now that it is becoming more of a reality, people are starting to pay more attention, and so this is the great opportunity for Indigo to release their new plan, the Marion County Transit Plan, in anticipation of a possible referendum in November.
And in terms of how confident are you that it will be on the ballot in November? would you say?
You know, I get asked all the time.
I
get asked all the time to judge the outcomes of legislative processes.
It's the beauty of having a live mic here. Yeah. So.
I'm confident that the support is there to get this on the ballot. And then a campaign, you treat this like any political campaign. But I think this was an issue that was in the political discourse during the elections, and I think there is support to get it on the ballot.
If you are just joining us, we are talking about mass transit here in Indianapolis and in central Indiana. It's at a critical juncture, as you probably have been listening. There's a possibility it could be on the ballot this November. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. Send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at wfyi. My guests are Brian Llewellyn from Indigo and Mark Fisher, who is the Vice President of the Indy Chamber of Commerce. I'm John Kroll. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, Director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking about mass transit today, mass transit for Indianapolis and for central Indiana. My guests are Brian Llewellyn from Indigo and Mark Fisher, who is the Vice President of the Indianapolis Chamber of Commerce. Dave, welcome to the program.
Yes.
Hi, what's on your mind?
Yes, I've heard the discussion, and I've heard this come up before in Indianapolis about mass transit, and it never goes anywhere because of, the control of the State House is by a party that believes mass transit is only widening interstates, not creating true mass transit. So do you get any indication that the State House really supports mass transit in Indianapolis financially? And if they don't, then it's kind of a waste of time to keep bringing it up until there's a big change in the State House.
Thanks very much for the call and the question, Dave. Yep. Mark?
Yeah, so I think it's really important to point out that the bill's two main sponsors as it passed through the legislative process were both Republicans, Jerry Torr from Carmel and Pat Miller from Indianapolis, Senator Patricia Miller. And Mayor Ballard, I think transit has come further, faster, under Mayor Ballard than in previous administrations, Republican or Democrat. So I don't think that it is a partisan issue. I think the broader issue of home rule at the State House is probably what the caller is more concerned about, is the fact that that our legislature does, they do keep tight controls on local government spending and what monies can be used for what purposes. That's essentially what we asked when we went to the legislature, was give us more home rule, allow these discussions to take place at the local level, because that is where the benefit and the cost will be borne and enjoyed.
We've gotten a Facebook question from a listener named Gary, and if you'd like to find us on Facebook, you can do so at No Limits WFYI. Gary says, I have a question about the stop design. Will the boarding location have trash receptacles and stations allowing pre-boarding pay stations allowing for quicker stops? Brian, I think that one's in your wheelhouse, right?
Absolutely. So there are a couple of components of the plan that are important to point out. The development of three rapid transit lines is possible. And with those rapid transit lines, there's significant investment in the infrastructure, upgraded stations, prepayment for ticketing, more facilities for the passengers. So the short answer is yes. And then throughout the system, there's also a need to invest in more infrastructure just for the regular local bus. So there's more shelter and more trash receptacles. That's absolutely a priority for us moving forward. Right now, it's a question of resources.
So there are some plans for expanding, obviously. Could you sort of lay out, give us an overview of that, and then also give us an idea of how firm these are, because you are seeking public input. I mean, how much editing is going to be allowed
here
or is possible?
So a little bit of background again. This is built off the IndyConnect planning process, and we're working within the confines of what is possible given the legislation that passed in 2014. Some kind of objectives of the plan were to maintain the existing coverage but expand ridership, create a system that is faster to travel. So that means less waiting for passengers, buses coming more often, earlier in the morning, later at night, 7 days a week throughout the city, faster, more direct travel, the development of the three new rapid transit lines, and a grid system to shorten your trip so that not every passenger would have to come downtown in order to transfer. The current system lacks the hours of service and the service 7 days a week to get people where they need to go every day reliably. And that's really the keystone of this project. So there are proposed lines on the map, and this public input process is designed so that we can hear concerns and that we can get different perspectives and hear about how these proposed changes to the local bus network and the development of these new rapid transit lines are going to impact neighbors and riders. So there is wiggle room. There are some things that are set. Largely, the alignment for the rapid transit lines are set. We have a lot more flexibility with local bus because that is, frankly, a lower outlay of capital improvement. And so we're not following the same process. We're following some federal processes that prescribe environmental impact study for the rapid transit lines.
And in terms of this overview, could you give me an idea, let's take it to the practical, how would it change the commuting experience here? And if this plan becomes a reality, how would people see their lives, their options differently?
We would be introducing frequent service across the city. Right now, we only have two routes that run at a 15-minute interval or better. And it's, for a city our size, that's pretty low. This is a 71% increase in the amount of service hours. So right now, if you add up all the number of hours that the buses operate on the street, we're about 500,000. This plan increases our operating hours to nearly 850,000. There's going to be more vehicles, replacing the vehicles more often. So we're going from a fleet size of 156 to 192. This is really changing the equation of what's on the supply side of the transportation system, where we have not supplied enough to make public transportation a viable option for a lot of people. And then once that is there, increasing access to jobs and the amount of people who are nearby, frequent, usable, reliable service, that's really the kind of overarching goal of the project.
And during the first segment of the program, people probably noticed that Mark was doing most of the talking because you were on your phone. There is some news in regard to funding in the Obama administration. You care to share that, right?
Sure.
Now?
We just got word that the Red Line Rapid Transit Project, which is a 13-mile segment of the three-county Red Line 35-mile plan that was identified in the IndyConnect project. Indigo has been selected to move forward with construction of that first phase within Marion County. So 13 miles of a rapid transit line. We've just gotten word that we should be getting the funding and we'll be able to construct that.
We've gotten an email question from a listener named Trevor. If you'd like to reach out to us by email, you can do so at nolimits@wfyi.org. And Trevor's question is, will the counties getting an individual choice about whether or not to have public transit create a patchwork problem where you have coverage to some destinations, limited coverage for others, and no coverage for still others? Will this cause confusion for people trying to get around? Will there be enough coverage, assuming everything goes as planned, to allow regular users of mass transit to not necessarily need a vehicle for their daily life?
Certainly outside of Marion County, where the systems that exist now are temporary express route services, so they're point-to-point, usually going from Indigo local bus service point to a main job hub, like the Whitestown connector, the North Plainfield connectors, or they're running open door paratransit service. They might be run by their council on aging. So there is no real system outside of Marion County, and that's going to be the challenge of developing that system and how it hooks into the Indigo system, because jobs aren't just in one county and residents aren't just in another county. People move throughout our region for jobs, healthcare, education, recreational opportunities. Originally, we did want to have a regional governing body. The appointments to that body actually killed the legislation for a year. So the legislature felt that it was going to be easiest to get these things started in a few communities, a few counties, and allow those counties to really dictate what is best for their community. And then as we mature as a system, I think we do need to revisit this this regional governance system. We do have CERTA, the Regional Transportation Authority. They could be a body that could manage and run a regional system. We do have an RDA, a Regional Development Authority, that was started for our regional cities application. There could be benefits with that. But right now it has to be, because that's what the legislature has given us, a county-by-county system.
And I would just add that the Metropolitan Planning Organization has been integrally involved in the development of the Indy Connect plan, and with the detail that we've rolled out with the Marion County plan. And there's even planning that's been going on in Hamilton County. There's discussion happening all around the region about how we move the ball forward with public transportation. There are a lot of players at the table who are looking at the nuts and bolts about what the best way to get the return on the money is. So, yeah, like Mark mentioned, sure, the ideal would be one regional system, but there is coordination happening across county lines.
Gotten a question from a listener named Brendan, who reached out to us via Facebook. And if you want to do that, you can find us at No Limits WFYI. Brendan says, does the opportunity to grow mass transit come at a bad time? Would Indy be building a 20th century system when huge jumps in transit, driverless cars, may be coming in the near future? Would any plans truly be a 21st century solution?
I'll just say this, you know, when we talk about transit and workforce mobility and personal mobility, we don't just talk about roads and streets versus buses versus trains. It is the rideshare. It is the bike lanes. It's the cultural trail. It is an enhanced transit service. Even if, you know, tomorrow we flip the switch and all cars being sold in America were driverless, all electric cars, you know, we had to have a program called Cash for Clunkers to get cars, you know, from the 60s and 70s off the road. There are still going to be people that need transit and people that choose to use transit. Maybe they don't want to drive. Maybe they can't afford a new driverless car. So the dire predictions of driverless cars putting transit systems out of service is debated all the time. I'd say probably what you'll see in Indianapolis before you see a lot of driverless cars are probably driverless buses.
And so Indigo and the City of Indianapolis and Metropolitan Planning Organization, several other local agencies were involved in a recent application to federal Department of Transportation program called Smart Cities. So we are looking toward the future, and we are planning to develop and test and help anticipate what some of these evolving landscape is for public transportation and transportation and personal mobility in general.
I think with the rideshare in particular, you know, rideshare, the availability of a car share to take you to places that might not be served by transit actually enhances a transit system. It doesn't take away from it, because if somebody can give up their car because they know that they have a reliable and convenient transit option, and then when they need to go to somewhere that isn't served by transit, they can have that ride share, or they know that they can hop on a bike and then put it on an Indigo bus. It is all about the system that is complementing each other, not taking away from one mode.
One way that we like to say it is developing a rich ecosystem of transportation choices, where transit can do really well in dense populated areas where the land use is favorable for transportation, but there's still applications for cars and lots of other options.
Got a related question from a listener named Kelly who connected with us via Twitter, and if you want to find us on Twitter, it's at WFYI. Kelly asks, has introduction of the Blue Indy program been good or bad for mass transit in Indy?
Well, as I just said, I think that any car share or ride-sharing service, if it's Blue Indy or Zipcar or Uber even, providing the more options, more personal mobility options, without the need to necessarily own a car, or if you're in a a multi-person household going down to one car. I think that the availability of those options actually enhance a transit system. Of course, the rollout and the issue of parking spaces has come up as we've discussed the red line. But those were two separate discussions, and I think that overall it's going to benefit. Of course, we just need to help people understand how they are benefiting each other.
And I guess the obvious question then is, whose job is it going to be to make sure that all of these systems then are complementing each other? Who's going to make sure that they're complementing and not competing?
So we are continuing to work with our partners. I have a former employee who now works at Blue Indy. There's a pretty new staff person at the city of Indianapolis who is tasked with coordinating transportation across mode and planning for how these different modes work together. The Metropolitan Planning Organization doesn't just do transit planning. They do multimodal planning. It requires constant attention and constant coordination.
What is the worst case scenario here? I mean, take me through levels here of worst case scenario probably is that you lose the vote in all six counties, I would presume. But what are the downsides? What things are you worried about right now in terms of trying to implement something that is this sweeping?
I think downside is that we do nothing. I think that's the absolute worst scenario. We have a system that is well managed and well run, given the resources that they are allocated, but we do not invest enough in transit, and doing nothing will continue to limit people's access to jobs, people's access to educational opportunities. So it does not address helping people be more self-sufficient if we do nothing.
Right.
I would absolutely agree. Doing nothing is not an option. Our city has not invested in transit significantly in the last decade or more. We have half the service that we used to have in the 80s. And the reality is that there's cost growth all across the economy. And if we're not looking to the future and planning for the future and investing to build a system that serves the community today and in the future, then we're going to continue to fall behind.
Let me add, Mark, you talked about return on investment earlier, or ROI, when you were lapsing into jargon. Have you done any sort of analysis of the opportunity costs here that have slipped by because we haven't invested in mass transit? Is there any evidence, any data that shows what it might have cost us because we don't have something in place that allows for the kind of self-sufficiency you're talking about?
I haven't seen that. I just see the last, the missed opportunities. But again, as job growth happens, only Detroit and Cleveland have seen worst exodus of traditional manufacturing from the urban core. Detroit and Cleveland. And then Indianapolis. And you look at where those cities are, and downtown Cleveland's coming back, downtown Detroit's coming back, but we don't want to hit bottom. And so as job growth does occur in the region, we need to have a discussion about how people access jobs in this community and making sure that people have all the opportunities they can and that employers have a wider net to cast in their workforce options as well. So I don't know any studies that have shown that the opportunity cost, but we do know, we hear from employers, especially in the counties that don't have this as an option right now, to say, I guess I probably should have checked on it if there was a transit line before I located here.
And people who are making decisions about where to live, they're looking at cities that have public transportation and have invested in a reliable, robust system, and they're choosing cities like Denver and Portland and New York over Indianapolis, and that's the real opportunity loss.
If you are just joining us, we are talking about mass transit, the plans and possibilities for Indianapolis and central Indiana. If you would like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. Send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI or on Twitter at WFYI. My guests are Brian Llewellyn from Indigo and Mark Fisher with the Indy Chamber of Commerce. I am John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking today about mass transit for Indianapolis and central Indiana. My guests are Brian Llewellyn from Indigo and Mark Fisher, who is the vice president of the Indianapolis Chamber of Commerce. Howard, welcome to the program.
Hi.
Hi. What's on your mind?
Yes. I have an alternative to mass transit, and it's called custom transit. In this age of information technology, it's no longer necessary to teach for people who travel daily from home to work and back again as part of a mass. By finding out where they want to go and when, we can plan ahead. And so it depends on having a central information system that can communicate between an information system and readily with the traveler.
Okay, well, look. Go ahead, Howard, and then let me get the question to them, okay? No, go ahead. Finish your
Let me explain that the backbone of this system is custom express buses that go from one stop near their home directly to where people work.
Okay.
So So the transit time is comparable to what you may have in a car. This whole transit system, there's no cash involved. Everything is planned ahead of time.
Okay. Well, let me see if Brian can get you an answer. Thanks very much for the call and the question, Howard.
Okay.
So this is exactly part of what Indianapolis has envisioned for a smart city. I mentioned the application that Indigo and the city have been involved with to pursue federal funding to build smart cities. This is pursuant to DOT Secretary Fox's initiative Beyond Traffic. Building a central data hub and having connected infrastructure and cross-mode cashless payment platform. Those are some of the key tenets that we looked at in this application. We just submitted that, I think, a week ago or so. There's a review process with that grant. And then early this spring, I think they will announce the next round finalists.
And I should say the phone lines are filling up here and we're getting emails, so I'm going to ask our listeners who are calling in or sending emails and also our panelists, let's be as concise as we can to give as many people a chance to talk as possible. Richard, welcome to the program.
Good afternoon. I've just moved back to Indianapolis after spending 20 years in the San Francisco Bay Area, and the transit system here is just a joke. And my question is, should I attribute that the current state of our mass transit here in Indianapolis to the fact that residents in the inner city are perceived to be mostly poor and black?
Thanks very much for the call and the question, Richard.
So this is a question of resources and a question of how much service we can supply. When you look at our operating budget, which is approximately $70 million annually, compared with Columbus, Ohio, Columbus, Ohio has double the service that we have. That's really the core of why the system is perceived as so poor, is because it creates this feedback loop where you don't have the frequency and you don't have the hours of service that attract people with an option. You actually drive people to get their own cars. And then
instead of a circle, it becomes a spiral.
Yes. Yes.
So let me ask this then. With the upgrade that we're talking, I mean, we have not attached in this conversation yet a price tag to what we plan to do. I mean, what are we looking at here in terms of the investment, to use Mark's term, that we're looking for the return on?
So from an annual operating budget perspective, I mentioned that we're about at $70 million a year right now. This plan, the Marion County Transit portion of the IndyConnect plan, based on a 0.25% income tax, which again is a quarter on $100 of income. That's what it equates to in consumer's terms. The annual operating budget for this plan is $108 million. So we would go from a $70 million operating budget to $108 million operating budget. And the majority of that is focused on more frequent local service throughout the city, creating a grid of options so that you can transfer easily and get from A to B.
And the other pieces of this, I mean, we have done shows on mass transit before, and there were billion-dollar price tags in terms of investment in that. How much overall, if we're looking at capital investment and all of that?
So over a five-year build-out, which is what the plan proposes, it is $390 million capital expenditure. Okay. Of which,
is that for Marion County? Would that be for the six counties?
That's Marion County, of which 59% of that is federally funded, with 26% coming from the local economy. So the way transportation funding works is that we pursue these federal grants for the build out of projects, capital, the capital side. And so that $390 million is the total build out price. That's not the local contribution.
I've gotten an email from a listener named Christopher. And if you'd like to reach out to us by email, you can find us at nolimits@wfyi.org. He says, I live on 42nd and College Avenue. In your computer generated demo of the Red Line, I did not see a place for current residents to park, especially with bus stops in the middle of the street. How will you address parking for lower-income families that live on the streets the Red Line is on?
So the Red Line is designed as a walk-up system. The average density within half a mile of the Red Line is twice what the density is in the rest of the city. This is a smart investment because of how it connects to where people are currently living and a high concentration of jobs. So it's designed as a walk-up system. Every transit user is a pedestrian. So the street network and the sidewalks and
curbs.
So you park
somewhere else if you have to, and then you approach wherever the access point is to the system. And how many access points are there going to be?
There's a stop every half mile on the 13-mile phase one. So it's
so you're never more than 20. If you're somewhere on that route, you're never more than a half mile. Well, actually, never more than a quarter of a mile away from I forgot my high school math there for a minute. A quarter of a mile away from an access point where you can get onto it.
Not only that, but the realignment of the system feeds these rapid transit lines. So it is much more convenient to access these rapid transit lines with the realignment of the Indigo system. It's much more convenient service. So instead of kind of scheduling, well, I've got to be out there at this time. I want to be out there at this time. If I miss the bus, I don't lose an hour out of my life. I lose 15 minutes out of my life.
We are talking about mass transit here on No Limits. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. Leah, welcome to the program. Leah?
Who?
I'm
Leah?
Sorry. Leah, yes.
Yes. I have a question also about that transit system running down the middle of the street. Considering pedestrians have to go to the middle of the street, I feel that's very dangerous. Considering that elderly people would want to take advantage of this, I feel that these system going down the middle of the street is ludicrous.
We'll get a response for you. Thanks very much for the call, Leah.
So these stations are actually platforms that are elevated 15 inches off the ground. So it's a really safe, comfortable environment. The platforms that are elevated 15 inches off the street level are connected by ramps and crosswalks. So it would be just like crossing the street. You cross at a signal that's timed and has a pedestrian phase on the signal. You use the crosswalk and walk up the ramp to this basically it's a high curb, so it's a level boarding with the bus. It's a safe environment for pedestrians.
So let's assume all of the political pieces fall into place here. A huge assumption, admittedly. And you've got the go. How long does it would it take to translate this from concept to reality?
So the entire plan that we've laid out, we can get done in 5 years.
So we'd be looking at somewhere at the start of the third decade of this century, then.
2021.
Like 2021, starting forward. Okay. So, and would it be 2021 would be the first part? Is that completion, all pieces of it together? Or will there be parts of it that come online earlier than that?
So the great news that we just got today about the Red Line being funded for construction, we're pursuing that ahead of any referendum.
Is there any political risk to that? Or is Mark, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, Brian.
It's hard to turn down a lot of federal money.
Yeah.
And we have the money, the resources locally to fund it operationally and for the local match. I don't see any political risks right now.
Well, I guess what happens, though, if the voters say no?
This would not affect the Red Line.
So the timeline, again, for the Red Line is we will start scoping for construction and bid the project out. Construction will happen in 2017, and service will open in 2018. So it's a pretty quick timeline, and it has been designed as a low-impact project, which is part of the reason that it was so competitive with lots of great walk-up service. The other two rapid transit lines will go through similar studies and will go through similar funding applications. And then the local bus network, those changes could happen a lot more quickly.
We are talking about mass transit here on No Limits. Gay, welcome to the program.
Hi. My question is, has any consideration ever been given to a system that would work something like FedEx does, where they have hubs in certain quadrants with enough parking place, and then all the buses would go to the hubs and then redistribute their passengers in a safe environment, like a nice heated building, et cetera. And I will also say that I'm old enough to have lived through streetcars and broader polluter place else, and that was at street level, and I don't think very many people got killed.
Thanks very much for the call, the question, and the story, Gay. Bye. Thanks. Bye-bye.
So Indigo is constructing and finishing, actually, our downtown transit center, which is exactly a passenger hub that the caller described. Throughout the network, there are going to be many, many other opportunities to transfer. So where two 15-minute routes cross on this frequent grid that is really the crux of the system, is building up these frequent spines that local routes feed into. There will be plenty of opportunities, and there are going to be capital improvements throughout the city with the infrastructure associated with the rapid transit lines, additional transfer facilities, and building up the pedestrian infrastructure.
We are talking about mass transit here on No Limits. Brian, welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. Just an upfront comment. I'm a little troubled by what I think Brian just said, that regardless of the referendum, it sounds like the Red Line is going to be built anyway. And that makes me wonder, what is the actual popular demand for the Red Line system? Is this not driven more by a desire to capture federal grant money? Is there demand for this locally? And what does the new Red Line system do that the existing Indigo bus system doesn't do along the same route?
Thanks very much for the call and question, Brian.
So, you know, the referendum, we're not a referendum state. This is kind of a new phenomenon for us. We have elected officials. We are a democratic republic. We elect officials to make decisions. The legislature has created a system that would allow us to expand and operate a system far beyond what we have today. Again, it only gets us to about where Columbus, Ohio is today. But the Red Line, we have the local ability to fund that without the increase in revenue from an income tax in the current Indigo budget. And so there isn't a need to go to a referendum for the Red Line in particular, the referendum really is about the broader system and realigning and making sure that we have an efficient and effective local bus system.
And to the question of what will the red line do that the current system doesn't do, reliability, putting the rapid transit in dedicated lanes creates this immensely powerful tool to move people reliably, quickly. We're talking about a bus every 10 minutes, which is real choice and real freedom. So people are going to find that this service is incredibly more useful than the service we offer today because of the comfort, because of the convenience, and because of the speed.
Got a question from a listener who didn't want to go on the air, and he's from Greenfield. He says that the mayor there has spoken out against mass transit because it would raise taxes. Are there any ways to help change anti-transit sentiment?
Mayor Fuel out in Greenfield is a great man. He's been involved with the chamber for a long time beforehand, and it was actually an appointment to the Central Indiana Regional Transportation Authority. Again, what we have said about our discussions at the State House and locally was that these are issues that need to be debated at the local level. And if Greenfield and Mayor Fuel don't feel that it is the right time or that this is the right issue for Greenfield, then that's that they are having that discussion at the local level. So, you know, it's I don't know a system that doesn't use tax dollars, but I don't know a road system that doesn't use tax dollars either.
Let me ask this question. It picks up on one that I think a listener named Brendan advanced, the question about are we building a 20th century for system for a 21st century world. We'll skip past that part and just go with how long do we anticipate even this system and this investment will meet the needs of this community?
And so the projections that the plan is based off of, they do show a modest amount of growth in Marion County. But to Mark's point, there's booming growth outside of Marion County in the region. And in order to participate in a regional economy, there's going to have to be more discussion about how we serve these bigger population growth areas outside of Marion County. So this plan is going to serve Marion County well into the long-term future. The projections show that the project would be well-funded and meet population growth over the next 25 years is what we're forecasting out at least. But the answer of the regional system, we're still not there yet.
So, and that's really a second stage to this discussion and a reason presumably to have you guys back on to talk about it at that point. I'd like to thank both of my guests, Brian Llewellyn and Mark Fisher. Brian's from Indigo, and Mark Fisher is the Vice President of the Indy Chamber of Commerce. Thank all of our listeners as well for some great questions and comments. I'd like to invite everybody to come back on Thursday when we are going to be talking about the rights of intersex children and transgender citizens here in this state. I am John Krall. You have been listening to No Limits. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Executive producer, Michelle Johnson. Producer, Shannon Cagle. Interactive media coordinator, Melissa Davis. Technical producers, Cedric Freeman and Chris Flood. And board engineer, Joe Hatcher. Abby Terzini screens our calls. No Limits is made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.